All right. Does anybody not know me? Raise your hand if you don't know me. I'm Kevin. Now you know me. Okay, well, if you guys were here last weekend, you know that your hero, Nick Crespo, and I were out of town. We went to California, so I thought I'd show you some of my favorite pictures from California. You guys okay with that before we start? Okay, here's the first one. That's Nick chowing down on some In-N-Out. Do I have any In-N-Out fans out there? That's what I thought. I think we literally lapped Los Angeles looking for this place, but we finally found it. We, between Nick and I, we had 4 double-doubles, 3 fries, 2 Cokes, and a shake in one sitting. So it was good. And I felt nice and fat afterwards. I really liked it. Here's our next picture. What's it? Oh, yeah, Nick with the snake around his neck. Yeah, that is on his website. That is a real snake. And right after we took that picture, it started constricting around his neck. And we had to slice it off. And no, not really. That would have been pretty sweet, though, right? 6-foot-long boa constrictor. We each got to hold it, and Nick started crying, I think. Okay, the next picture. What do we got next? Oh, yeah, we got to hang out with Family Force 5. Except I think that's only like the Family Force 3 right there, because they're not all there. My favorite guy, you know who it is? No, you know who it is. His name's Xanadu, and he's like the tambourine dude. You guys know that he doesn't play an instrument; he just dances, you know. And he's got long, flowing, curly hair. So yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, it's actually Family Force 6 because they don't know how to count, I guess. Okay, next picture. What do we got next? Oh, yeah. That's me with a cute little butterfly on my shoulder. You like that? That's actually a real butterfly that me and my buddy Andy that was out there, we found it. It got washed up in the waves. So our compassionate hearts, we went out of our way to nurse it back to health. And then he was all, hey, Kevin, can I put it on your shoulder? I was like, sure, why not? So he put it on my shoulder. It stayed on there for like 20, 30 minutes, just perched right there. So we went walking. It was really funny to like see people's reactions, you know. Hey, how's it going? They're all. Like they didn't really want to ask if that was real, you know. I kind of felt like I was one of those like animal trainers, crazy animal trainers that you see on the street with a monkey climbing on him or something. And then here's the last picture. We saw Sinbad in the airport. So we took a picture with Sinbad. Do you guys know Sinbad? No. What? He's in that movie House Guest. If you guys have ever seen House Guest, I like that movie. But yeah, so Nick and I took a picture with Sinbad. It was fun. But anyways, I'm glad to be with you guys tonight. Somebody was asking me today, they said, is it hard coming up with a message to teach to 6th all the way up to 12th graders? And I thought, yeah, it's a little challenging sometimes. But then I thought, my upcoming challenge is coming up on Monday. I'm doing a chapel service at a school, Albuquerque Christian School, and I'll be there, and they at their chapel service, they have kindergarten through 8th grade, all right? And I don't know if you guys have ever tried to do a Bible study, kindergarten through 8th grade. I'm a little scared, okay, because I got 8th graders, 6th graders, 7th, a lot of people who can read, all the way down to little kindergartners. You know, I'm like, hey, you guys, read your Bible, and they're all, we can't read, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I'm glad to have you guys. I'm glad to be here with you guys tonight. Now, just a little bit about me. I know most of you guys know me, and a lot of you guys considered me to be a giant, all right? Especially some of the middle schoolers. I'm quite tall, and I get told that all the time. And I regularly get reminded of that. Now, I found out that officially I'm not a giant, okay, because giant stature goes to people who are between 7 to 8 feet tall. So I'm not quite there, but I'm really working on it. You guys can pray for me about that, all right? But imagine this. I'm 6'5", okay? Now, you can imagine being 6'5" in a 5'9" person's world can be a little challenging at times, okay? The average American is 5'9", the average American male. So a lot of things are built around the 5'9" person. And you can imagine that sometimes I got to kind of come down to be a part of that world, if you know what I mean. Some examples. If you guys have ever been to Walmart with me, you know that a lot of times, or any store really, a lot of times I get used as like a forklift to take things off the top shelf or to put it back on the top shelf, you know. I do all kinds of stuff like that. I put clothes on the top rack. I dust ceiling fans. I decorate for parties where people can't reach, you know. I hit my head on door frames, on light fixtures, on wind chimes. You know, it's just sometimes it's not that cool. In fact, one time, check this one out. One time I was at Walmart, and I guess I scared a little girl so bad. I walked around the corner. I'm just walking down the aisle. I turn the corner. This little girl is in her mom's shopping cart, and she just looks up at me and screams. It's like, am I that freakish, you know? Man, that's terrible. And in fact, a lot of you guys have heard some of the nicknames I got when I went on a mission trip to Nicaragua. I got names like Goliath, which is Spanish for Goliath, Gigante, which is giant, or my favorite, Lapis Alto, which means tall pencil, okay? Tall pencil. So they call me that. Here's another example. My wife used to own a 1992 Buick Skylark, all right? It was a very nice sports car, I guess you could call it that. It fit nicely with other grandma cars that sometimes were here at the church. But the thing about her car was the roof was so low for me to get into it, I had to drive like this, kind of like off to the side. And I realized that once I sat in a car like that or leaned back my chair, that I automatically got like a gangster voice, you know? Like I was all, yo, what up? Check me out. My little writer, right? Well, on a very small scale, about 8 inches, I know what it's like to come down into a different person's world. Well, God knows it on a much, much broader scale. Let's think about it. The Creator became a creation. Jesus became a human. Jesus gave up his heavenly throne to come down and be born as a human baby. And you guys know where he was born. He wasn't born in a 5-star Hilton. He was born in an animal feeding trough called a manger, out in a barnyard. Jesus gave up a lot to come down onto our level. Have you guys ever thought what it took, what it means that Jesus was a human baby? That means he played with toys and cried and had dirty diapers. Jesus Christ, the Savior of the universe. Look at what he gave up to come down to our level. That's what we're going to be learning tonight about God on our level. Make sure you guys are turned to Genesis chapter 18, where we're going to be studying tonight. It gives us a pretty interesting account of God on our level. And we have an example of what theologians would call a theophany or a Christophany. Basically, a theophany comes from two words that mean God and to show or manifest. So basically, when someone says in the Old Testament there was a theophany, it was a revelation of God, usually in the form of an angel or a man. And to get even more specific, a Christophany would be Christ revealed. And that's a little glimpse that we get tonight, because a lot of people believe that this is one of the first Christophanies or theophanies in the Old Testament. Now, that's a big word. I don't want you guys to like go around trying to use that all the time. I rarely know how to pronounce it, but it's an interesting thing that God in heaven would reveal himself to us sinners on our planet. He would come down to our level. And so we're going to see two ways tonight that are on the back of your bulletins if you want to fill in the blanks. Ways that God relates to us, ways that God relates to Abraham, and how Abraham responds each time. In Velocity, we're studying through Genesis, where this is our 7th week in the life of Abraham, and we've gone through a lot of stuff, but we're going to see some ways that Abraham responds to this revelation of God. Look with me, Genesis chapter 18, verse 1. Then the Lord appeared to him, speaking of Abraham, by the terebinth trees of Mamre, as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So number one, they're seeing eye to eye. God has come down from heaven to earth, and he is seeing eye to eye. Now, eye contact is a big part of communication, but it's on the decline because of text messaging, because of cell phones, because of the way we communicate, emails, all of those things. They can be great. They can be handy. I found out that around the year 2004, 2 years ago, they found out that there were about 500 billion text messages sent each year worldwide. 500 billion. Now, if you guys calculate that out and you know that your cell phone provider charges you probably about 10 cents per message, that's $50 billion that they're making every year off of our text messaging. Okay? That's a lot of texting that we got going on. Now, maybe you guys have heard about a famous text that just happened in the news recently. Maybe you guys have heard of Britney Spears or Kevin Federline, and they were married. And a big shock, because I don't know about you guys, I was sure that marriage would last, you know. But big shock, they broke up. And word has it that Britney divorced Kevin Federline on a text message. Can you believe that? He's eating dinner. Hi, I want to divorce you. Goodbye. I don't know exactly what it said, but can you imagine what a terrible text message that would be? Well, eye-to-eye contact is a very important part of communication, and God has sent us basically a big text message. It's 66 books long. It's really long. Wouldn't fit in your cell phone. But to Abraham, God appeared, man to man, eye to eye. And so let's see how Abraham responds. First of all, Abraham greets God. Read with me Genesis chapter 18, starting in verse 2. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, "My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you have said." Verse 6. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quickly, make ready three measures of fine meal. Knead it and make cakes." And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. Verse 8. So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree as they ate. So verse 1, it says that when God appeared to Abraham, he was sitting in the tent door. But when these visitors come, he begins to do everything that he possibly can to welcome them, to show them that they are welcome at his little household. Verses 4 through 8 tell us exactly how he does it. He gets some water, bread. He gets his wife Sarah to start making cakes. He gets a calf, gives it to his servant so that he can start preparing this calf for a meal. It says he brings butter and milk. In these days, you couldn't just run down to the 7-Eleven and buy a stick of butter and some milk. You had to prepare it. He went to some major effort to make sure that these guys were taken care of. Look at the action words. Verse 2, it says he ran and he bowed. Verse 6 says he hurried and he said, "Quickly, make ready." Verse 7 says he ran and he hastened to prepare it. Many people refer a verse in Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2, to this passage in Genesis 18. We'll put up on the screen here. Hebrews 13, 2 says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels." Now that's interesting. A lot of people apply that verse in Hebrews back to this story in Genesis 18, because most people agree that right here, Abraham does not know yet that these are angelic, heavenly visitors. As far as he knows, these are just three guys that showed up. But he's enough of a servant that he runs and he prepares all of these things for them. So he does this. And he was just greeting the guests. But in doing so, he was greeting God himself. We're going to see that later on as it becomes obvious that this is God as the two angels walk away to the next city. But you know what's cool is that we have an opportunity to do the very same thing today in our everyday lives. We have an opportunity to reach out to other people. We have an opportunity to greet God and to make him feel welcome. You know how we do it? Well, Jesus gave us some insight in Matthew 25:40. He says, "Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me." And what he's talking about, he said, "Hey guys, remember when I was thirsty and he gave me something to drink? Remember when I was hungry and he gave me some food?" And his disciples are like, "Dude, I don't know what you're talking about. You're the one who multiplies the food. Why would you be hungry?" You know? And Jesus says, "Inasmuch as you did it to anyone else, you did it to me." So there's people in need all around us. You guys, Vertical's doing the canned food drive. That's awesome. Both youth groups, we're doing Operation Christmas Child. Inasmuch as you do that for others, you're doing it for Jesus Christ himself. That gives you a totally different viewpoint on it, doesn't it? You're not just doing it for some kid who you may never even see and he'll probably never even thank you for. It's Jesus and your reward's in heaven. Serving others is serving God. Remember that. But God doesn't just show up here for fun. There's a reason that he has stopped by Abraham's tent. Because second of all, God meets with Abraham. Abraham greeted God, but now God meets with Abraham. Read with me, starting again in verse 9. "Then they said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' So he said, 'Here in the tent.' And he said, 'I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son.' Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbirthing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, 'After I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And the Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son.' But Sarah denied it," verse 15, "saying, 'I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" God shows her very clearly, "Oh, I heard you." What a meeting this must have been. God meeting with Abraham. Abraham prepares this feast. He hangs out with these three dudes as they eat. It turns out that these are much more than just three dudes who wandered by the tent. Verse 10, these visitors say that in 9 months, Sarah is going to have a baby. And that's big news. That's huge news. Because Abraham has been waiting for this for over 24 years now, since Genesis chapter 12, when God said, "I'm going to make you a great nation." He's been waiting for over 24 years, and now three dudes show up. He gives them some food, and they say, "Hey, when we come back next year, you're going to have a baby." "Oh, yeah, sure we are." Now, does anybody remember how old Abraham and Sarah are at this point? Sarah is 90. Abraham is 100. When were the last time you heard of people that old giving birth? Hopefully never. That doesn't happen. And if it does, that's creepy, right? It's completely impossible. There's no way. In fact, you know what's funny? I love reading about this in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 11 through 12. It describes Sarah and Abraham pretty interestingly to me. Verse 11 describes Sarah as, it says she has passed the age. And then it describes Abraham as good as dead. That's how old this guy was. Have you guys ever seen somebody that's so old, it looks like they're probably going to die tomorrow? You know, like, "Oh man, hey, how's it going? I may never see you again," you know? They're that old, right? Their face is all droopy and, hey, whatever. Maybe they're still going to live. That'd be great. Well, that's Abraham. You look at him, the Bible describes him as good as dead. Man, that's not very good. I hope I never get described that way. But Sarah's not a spring chick either. She's not too young herself. But these visitors say, "Hey, guys, next year, a baby's coming. Yeah, Abraham, you'll be 101. Sarah will be 91, but yeah, it's coming. So Sarah is eavesdropping on the conversation. She's standing in the tent, and she hears the news, and it says she laughed within herself. She didn't laugh out loud. Last chapter, Abraham was told this by God, and he fell on his face laughing. He thought that was so funny that God was joking. Can you believe that? God says, hey, you're going to have a son. Oh, man, that's good, God. Oh, man, that's great. And he falls on his face, it says, laughing. Well, this one, Sarah laughs to herself. But God sees all. He hears all. He knows all. And so he asks, hey, why did Sarah laugh? Now, it's interesting to me what happens here. Because Sarah obviously does not believe that God is going to do this. She says, can I really do this being this old? There's no way. She laughs at it. Her disbelief, though, leads to further sin. Did you catch what happened? She laughed, not believing that God could do this incredible miracle. Then God said, hey, why did she laugh? And she says, I didn't laugh. She completely denies it, an outright lie. Do you see what disbelief does? When you don't believe that God can or will use you, it leads to further and further and further sin. And you just continue to cover it up, continue to lie about it. And that's what Sarah did. We need to trust God's plan for our lives. He's got a big one. Well, 1 year later, their son, whose name means laughter, Isaac, would be born. And his name, Laughter, would be a continual reminder to Abraham and to Sarah about their disbelief when God told them what he was going to do. God says, oh yeah, you both laughed when I said I was going to do that? Cool. Why don't you name him Laughter? And then every time you see him, you can remember that you laughed at my promise. How about that? God shows him, doesn't he? So God and Abraham got to see eye to eye. Abraham greeted God. God met with Abraham. Well, second, Abraham and God are speaking friend to friend. They're speaking friend to friend. Now, like I said, communication comes in a lot of different ways. Emails, text messages, phone calls, those things. They can be good. They're sometimes good forms of communication, but not fully. In fact, I read about a fire safety pamphlet that was put out. It was translated from English into an Arab language called Urdu, all right? And it was translated, and it's interesting how sometimes you can lose some of the quality in translation, all right? Check out, the English version said, never jump straight out of a window, lower yourself onto cushions, okay? Now that makes sense, right? There's a fire, don't go diving out a window. Make sure there's some cushions down there, right? Well, when they translated it, they got a little mixed up in the language. Here's what it said in this other language. Never jump out of a window straight. Put yourself on a donkey and come down. Somehow, the translation for pillow and donkey were very similar words. So all these Arab people are like, so if there's a fire, I got to find a donkey to jump out the window, you know? So you can see how there's a little gap sometimes in some word communication. It doesn't always work out right. In fact, they've done studies on it. They found that words are only 7% of total communication, the written words. Your tone of voice makes up 38% of communication. And even beyond that, body gestures make up an extra 55%. Have you guys ever seen people who won't quit talking with their hands, kind of like me, you know? Like I'm doing karate moves trying to tell you guys stuff. Yeah, and it's really cool, and I think I'm really getting the point across, you know? Well, sometimes there's a lot of different things that go into communication. And we have God's written word. But you know what? We don't get to talk to these authors face to face until we get to heaven. So there's a lot of things. I wonder how much stuff we miss out on because we can't hear their tone of voice. We can't see their body gestures. But Abraham had something very special. He was speaking friend to friend with God himself. So let's see a couple things about this conversation. First of all, God informs Abraham. God informs Abraham. Look at verse 16. Then the men rose from there and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to send them on the way. And the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham that he has what he has spoken to him." Verse 20, and the Lord said, "Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know." Verse 22, then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. This reminds me of what Jesus told his disciples in the upper room, right before he was taken away to be crucified, what we know as the Last Supper. John 15:15, he said this, Jesus' own words. He said, "No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you." And that's exactly what God does right here for Abraham. You know that three times throughout the scripture, Abraham is called the friend of God. That's a pretty great title. And it's no wonder that he receives this title, because God is in the habit of sharing every single thing that he is going to do. He shares right here the upcoming destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's a pretty big deal. He shares about Abraham's future, that he's not going to be able to count his descendants. He says, "Hey, when I come back in a year, you're going to have a son, and here's what you're going to name him." He lays out his plans. He lays out the times, the dates. He spells it all out for him. You can tell that God and Abraham had a very close relationship. So he spells out what he's going to do, but he also spells out why he's going to do it. Look back at verse 20. It says, "And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave." So I was reading this and I thought, well, that's interesting. What outcries is God talking about here? Were people praying against this city? Or what kind of cries? Were they literal cries that God heard? I don't quite get it. Well, let me remind you of God's words to Cain back in Genesis chapter 4. You guys probably remember the story. Cain and Abel, brothers. Cain got really mad at Abel, killed Abel, probably buried him somewhere, left him out in the wilderness somewhere. God said, "Hey, Cain, where's your brother?" As if he didn't know. And you remember Cain's reply? "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" Right? Maybe you guys have pulled that one before. "Hey, where's your little brother?" "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" You know? You get all sassy like Cain did. Well, God, check out his reply back in chapter 4. He says, "The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." This sin was finding them out. You know what? Sin stinks, literally. The thoughts that it brings, the actions that it causes, but I would say especially the consequences. Sin is terrible. I love this verse in 2 Corinthians 2:15. It says, "For we are to God the fragrance of Christ." The fragrance of Christ. In other words, our lives of faith are a good smell to God. Now, not literally. He's not up in heaven like, "Oh man, they kind of smell good down there in vertical velocity tonight," you know? Now, I think he's totally blessed by the fact that we're studying his word. I'll bet he loves it. But it's not like a real fragrance is rising up to him. But he's kind of given us an illustration here. The life of faith smells good to God. The life of selfishness stinks to God. He hates it. It makes him sick. Speaking of stink, you guys may get a little grossed out by this. Read a news story this week. There's a family suing the company of Greyhound bus lines, all right? Maybe you guys have heard of this. But they, let me just set the scene here for you. 2 years ago, 2004, it's Mother's Day. There's flowers in the air. Everything's lovely. There's Hallmark greeting cards. Everybody's having a good time. This one family goes out to lunch, takes the mom to lunch. They're driving home after lunch behind the big Greyhound bus. When the big Greyhound bus, for whatever reason, decides to empty its sewage tank while driving. Now, this family was happened to be driving right behind this bus when it emptied the sewage tank, and they happened to have their windows down and their sunroof open. Now, girls, if you don't want to hear this, you can plug your ears. Guys, I know you're going to like this. The driver said he had to turn on the windshield wipers to move the... No. To move the chunks. That's what he said. Girls, I told you could plug your ears, all right? That's the truth. Can I get a big stink for that one? That stinks, right? Literally, for that family. I would sue Greyhound like they'd never been sued before. Well, that's kind of funny and all, but you know what's not funny? Is the sin in our lives. Because it makes God sick. He hates it. God cannot put up with it. Do you know that's why there is a hell? Because God is a just God. In one, he's a loving God. He died for the whole world. Jesus died for all of us. But on the other hand, he is a just God. And a true, loving, just God cannot tolerate sin. He hates it. He hates it in every one of our lives. It's a big deal to God. And it's time for us to recognize, just like this city's sin found them out, just like Cain's sin found him out, your sin one day will find you out. Maybe it's not today. Maybe it's not next month. Maybe it's not even while you're here on earth. But one day, you're going to sit before Jesus, and your sin will have found you out by that point. The one relationship that matters in your life is where you're at with Jesus Christ. So make sure that you're living correctly. God informs Abraham of his plans. But how will Abraham respond? Well, let's find out. Abraham implores God. Fancy word, implore means to beg for urgently. To beg for urgently. We're going to beg for people urgently after this service. We're going to close this service tonight spending time praying for lost people, for maybe the youth group up in California that we're praying for anything that God lays on your heart. We are going to spend a few minutes at the end of this service asking God, begging God to work in each of those people. But that's exactly what Abraham does here. Read with me starting in verse 23, follow along. And Abraham came near and said, would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? So remember, God has just told Abraham, hey, remember those cities, Sodom and Gomorrah? I'm going to wipe them out. They are such sinners. Their sin has cried out to me. I hate it. It's time for destruction. It's judgment time. It's go time, God says. So he tells Abraham that. Well, Abraham says, are you also going to kill the righteous people that live in that city? Abraham's probably thinking of his nephew Lot. Lot and his family live in Sodom. And he's thinking, you wouldn't kill Lot also. You wouldn't also kill the righteous people. We know that Lot at this time, even though he's gotten really close and gotten mixed up in this evil, he's still a righteous man. We read about that in 2 Peter chapter 2. It says that he was righteous. So Abraham says, are you really going to kill the righteous with the unrighteous? Look at verse 24. Suppose there were 50 righteous within the city. Would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? So the Lord said, fine, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. Verse 27, Abraham doesn't stop there. Then Abraham answered and said, indeed now, I am but dust and ashes, have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose there were five less than the 50 righteous. Would you destroy all of the city for the lack of five? So he said, if I find there 45, I will not destroy it. And if you continue to read, you see that Abraham talks God down even more. From 50 to 45 to 40 to 30 to 20 to 10. He finally gets to 10. And he said, God says, fine, if I find 10 righteous people in Sodom and Gomorrah, I won't destroy the city. Abraham has pleaded over and over. And I know it just took us a few seconds to read that prayer, but I wonder how long it took Abraham to pray that prayer. Who knows? Maybe he was on his knees for a whole day talking to God face to face like a friend. God, will you really do that? God, there's righteous people. Please save the righteous. Save the city for the sake of 30, for the sake of 20, for the sake of 10 righteous people. Abraham begs God to do this. He's talking to him. He's praying to him face to face. And the idea of praying for someone else has a special term. It's called intercessory prayer. That's what we're going to do tonight at the end of this service. But basically, to intercede means to ask for on someone else's behalf. But God is already working towards judgment. Because we read back in verse 16 in chapter 18 that the men went on their way. The two other guys that were with God left. It says they went on their way. And we read in the first verse of chapter 19, it says the two angels came to Sodom in the evening. So we know that these three visitors that were with Abraham were most likely a revelation of God and two angels. But it tells us in verse 16, the angels started walking towards Sodom. And in chapter 19, they get there in the night. And if you read chapter 19, you see what happens to this evil city. Unfortunately, though, as you read the story, only four righteous people make it out of the city. Three end up living. Lot and his two daughters. His wife is killed because she disobeyed the Lord. And both cities are wiped out. Velocity, if you guys come next Saturday, we'll see evidence of that. As they've found these cities recently. You guys can, I believe, find it online. They've done these new excavations lately and found what they believe to be the ancient remains of these cities. And they found pieces of burned pottery, pieces of pottery that are scorched at such intense heat that they know any man at that time living wouldn't have been able to make heat that hot. It happened so quickly and with such intense heat that it is very clear that God did it. He struck these people dead. So despite Abraham's prayers, the city gets destroyed. These people continued in their sin. Abraham's praying for them. They continued in their sin. God destroyed the cities. You know what? Sometimes that's frustrating. Would you agree? You're praying for somebody. And us as humans, we like results right now. Don't we? We don't like to have to wait. Sometimes God likes us to wait, though. But God eventually destroys this city. Does that make Abraham a failure? Does that mean that Abraham's prayers were wasted? No way. Abraham prayed and obeyed. And that's all God asked. That's all God asks of every one of you. Pray for those people. Obey what God wants you to do in your life. That's all you can do. You can't go out and change people's lives. God has to do it. And you know what's cool is that a lot of times God uses our prayers to do that. I love that we have that opportunity. James 5:16 says that the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. It's powerful. So don't give up praying if you don't see answers happen. Maybe the opposite happens. That doesn't mean your time was wasted. That means God's plan was different than yours. God is on our level. He's come down to where we're at. He knows our joys. He knows our pains. He knows the good and bad of our lives. God, the creator of the universe, is where we can talk to him. He wants us to talk to him, eye to eye, friend to friend. Let me give you guys a couple ideas as to how to do that. I heard about a girl one time who had the opportunity on a Friday night to go hang out with her friends, but instead, she decided she wanted to spend some time with the Lord. She's all alone in her house. Maybe if she had some roommates, they were gone. She set up this really nice, fancy table, set out some candlesticks, some really nice food. She cooked a meal for two. She set out two place settings. She sat down at one, and she invited Jesus to sit down at the next. And she sat there, and she had dinner for hours with Jesus sitting there. Now, it sounds a little crazy. You say, well, that's weird. What if somebody walked in? They'd think she's crazy. Yeah, probably. Who cares? She spent hours just talking like a friend to Jesus. Now, I've tried that before in a different way. Here's a way you guys can try it. Try it sometime. Just, I know it's going to sound weird, but just give it a try. See what happens. It'll change the way you talk to God. Here's what I did. I went into my room. I was a little scared on somebody walking into my room because I was scared they'd think I was crazy. But I closed my door, turned on some music. I sat on the side of my bed, and I pulled up a chair. Same thing. I invited Jesus to sit down. And I talked to him as though I could see him like my friend. Now, it sounds a little crazy. I understand. And you feel at first a little crazy doing it. But then, once you start talking to God like he's your friend, like he cares, it will change the way you talk to him. You won't want to quit. It's amazing when you recognize that God has come down to our level and he wants to speak to us like a friend. He is real and he hears you. So right now, what I told you, we're going to close in a time of intercessory prayer. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes. We're going to spend the next 5 or 6 praying for unsaved friends, for unsaved family members, maybe for the youth group up in Colorado that we're praying for. What I want you guys to do here in just a minute is get in groups, maybe 5, maybe 10 people. And you guys will pray together as a group. One person praying at a time. If you guys want to all pray together, that's fine. Spend 5 or 6 minutes praying together, lifting up these unsaved people. Maybe there's people in this room who don't have a relationship with God. If that's the case, I want you to find a leader. Because like I said, the one relationship that matters in this life is your relationship with God. And he smells the sin in your life, and it stinks to him. But sin doesn't have to have power over your life anymore. Jesus came to take away that power, and he did. You just got to present your life to him. And I can tell you, there is no better feeling than throwing your hands up and saying, God, I surrender. I give it to you. I'm tired of living this way. And if you need to make that decision in here tonight, you find a velocity or vertical leader, we would love to pray with you. It's a very simple prayer. You just confess your sin. You say, God, I was born a sinner. I need a Savior, and I invite you into my life. Help me to live for you. It's a very simple prayer. There's no code words, but you just open your heart, and God is waiting. He's extended the invitation. So let me read you this verse, Jeremiah 29. This is out of the Message. Little different paraphrase than you may have heard it before, but I love how it words it. It says, this is God speaking, when you call on me, when you come and pray to me, I'll listen. When you come looking for me, you'll find me. Yes, when you get serious about finding me and want it more than anything else, I'll make sure you won't be disappointed. Aren't those good words? You're not going to be disappointed tonight. So if God says, if you'll get serious about it and you'll seek him with all you have, God will do incredible things through your prayers. And I look forward over the next couple weeks to you looking back on this night and saying, wow, look at what God did when I just got on my knees and prayed. So let's do that right now. Get in groups of 5, 10 people. Spend the next 5 or 6 minutes praying, and then I'll close us in prayer. Just people around you, get together with them if you're on the floor. You can move your chairs if you'd like to, whatever you need to do, but just spend a few minutes praying, and then I'll close this in prayer in just a couple minutes.